The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
We begin with the war in Iran, which continues as ships are targeted and oil prices surge. Let's get all the latest from the region. I'm joined now by global affairs journalist and author of The Heartbeat of Iran, Tara Kangerlou, and investment director with AJ Bell, Russ Mould. And I'll start, Tara, with you. If you can take us through what's been happening over the last 24 hours.
Good morning, Claire, and good morning to our listeners. Well, last night, UN Security Council adopted a resolution condemning Iran's attacks in the Gulf. The attacks are continuing, as are the attacks on Iran. Over 13,000 civilian infrastructures have been hit in Iran. This includes nearly 10,000 residences, apartment complexes, more than 1,300 people, civilians have been killed and thousands injured. And this is in Iran, according to Iran's Red Crescent Society. So, Claire, what I can tell you is that we're nowhere to see this war abate, and things are only escalating. We also know that President Trump has been asked as to when this war would end. And I think it's important to contextualize what's happening. The war daily is costing the American taxpayers $1 billion a day. And the idea that this is an open-ended war with no sign of the last day in sight, because the objectives seem to be, again, clear and changing, every day in every presser that we hear from the White House, is concerning. To who? Ordinary people, civilians, whether it be in Iran, in Lebanon. Nearly 1 million people are displaced in Lebanon, Claire. And this mm-hmm. is a country of 5 million. So it's challenging. And also to Gulf nations and people in Israel.
You know, even if Donald Trump decides today that he's out, that he's going to end this, and there's no sign that that will happen, but he does keep reiterating that this will be a short war. We have no guarantee that this conflict will end at that moment, because we don't know what Israel is going to do. It seems to have its sights set on Hezbollah in southern Lebanon, but also the Iranians now, having been provoked to the extent that they have, seem determined to cause economic turmoil, and that means the Strait of Hormuz will be in their sights regardless of what happens next.
Absolutely. And mind you, again, another number that's important for our listeners, during the past 12 days, 13 days of this war, Iran has exported over 11 million barrels of oil to China through the Strait of Hormuz. And mind you that China is Iran's biggest buyer of oil. It's been doing it on black market despite the international sanctions, and is paying Iran in Chinese currency. So again, we are left with a situation where the Iranian regime is going about doing its business. They have been planning for this day for a very long time. Sources in Iran are telling me that they haven't even started using their big missiles. Then, they haven't even tapped into the entirety of their military arsenal. And another important fact here is that what's happening in Iran, Claire, is emboldening the most hardline factions of the regime. Those who are staunch supporters of the Islamic Republic ideologically, militarily, and politically. These are the people who are now emboldened and, quite frankly, are in charge. Because, again, we heard the announcement over the election of the new supreme leader, Mujtaba Khamenei, who's Khamenei's son. But we haven't yet seen him. We have no idea whether or not he's alive or not. There are rumors that he's been hit. Some say he's in a coma. Some say, he was just, wounded. But the bottom line is, those in charge in Iran see this as a fight for their survival, for their existence, and they're going all in. And to your point about the region, thinking there is either we could pressure the Gulf countries so that they can put pressure on the U.S. to end this war. That hasn't happened, right? Things have only escalated. Or we're going down, and we're going to take that entire region down with us.
What do you think the strategy is behind the election of the new supreme leader? As you say, questions have been asked about where he is and whether he's alive or not. Why put him in that position if he cannot be visible? Or is it the case that Donald Trump is right, that anyone else or all of the people who might have been deemed the next supreme leader were taken out by the Americans?
The second is not true, because there are other people who were being considered for this role. They're extremely influential clerics who could have taken the role, again, as hardline. One of them is actually the brother of Ali Larijani, the head of the National Security Council. His brother is a high-ranking cleric, and it's important, again, for our listeners to understand that the regime in Iran is divided into various factions. For a long time, all these factions were fighting with one another over power. And in some ways, right now, you cannot say they've united, but at least they're in damage control mode, and they have come together to continue the regime in a wartime state. But as far as the election of Mojtaba, you know, the idea that the country is united and we're continuing this lineage of the second supreme leader of the country, Ali Khamenei, could have been a good sell to the hardline supporters and the camp that, you know, are the majority of the IRGC supporters. So from a narrative standpoint, it worked, right? But mm-hmm. whether or not Mojtaba is alive or not, it's kind of irrelevant at this point, because those supportive of the IRGC and the regime have already bought that, right? That he's alive, you know, he's there. And those who haven't, it doesn't matter, because people who are controlling from behind the scene are those hardline individuals, again, the Larijanis of Iran, Mohammad Bahar Ghalibaf, who's the Speaker of the Parliament. These are the individuals who control so much of the country's power and have their hand in multiple facets of the IRGC.
Tara, thank you very much for...
They're pushing things forward. Yes, sorry, yes.
That's all right. Thank you very much for being with us this morning. I want to move to Russ Mould now, Investment Director with AJ Bell. Good morning, Russ.
Morning to you, Claire.
So we had the unprecedented decision from the International Energy Agency yesterday to release the 400 million barrels of oil, something they haven't done at that level for the 50 years of their existence. But it hasn't really made a jot of difference, because oil overnight topped $100 a barrel. I know it's moderated somewhat, but the market's very jittery, is it?
It is. And I think there are two issues. One, we've just been discussing those attacks on the ships in the Iraqi port of Basra, and one vessel in the Dubai port of Jebel Ali, which shows that the Straits of Hormuz is still not safe for shipping, and ship owners and captains and crew are going to be unlikely to risk it, even if they can get the insurance. And the other issue is that everybody's looking at, well, 400 million barrels sounds like a lot of oil, but it's only 4 days global consumption, and it's 20 to 25 days worth of the volume that goes through the Straits of Hormuz. So it goes back to this issue of, if we get a brief conflict for whatever reason, that may well be enough. But if the war goes on for longer than a month, then the IEA and the West have to have another look at where they're going to get the hydrocarbons from. So I think that's why the oil price remains very, very jittery.
Mm-hmm. And what else has been happening on the markets overnight? Because the signals we were getting from the international markets was that there was a belief that this would be a short war. Is that still what you're seeing?
It's still their base case. Yes, very much so. I mean, oil is up by, a third from its levels before this conflict began. But most strategists and economists, if you read their research, are still saying $70 to $75 oil is the base case for the year, which did employ a short war. And although markets are not going up, they're not going down. So they're waiting as much for good news rather than fearing bad news. Mm-hmm. If you are seeing any jitters, it's in government bond markets, the amount that governments are charged to borrow by financial markets. Yields are creeping up. That reflects some worries that inflation is going to get going again if oil and gas stay high. Or indeed that, as we've just been hearing, the colossal cost of the war means that some governments will having to sell more bonds to fund more borrowing. And if the supply of something goes up, then its price usually goes down. So it'll be intriguing to see what the European Central Bank, US Federal Reserve and Bank of England all have to say when they release their latest interest rate policy decisions next week, because the ECB seems to have broadly finished cutting rates anyway. There were hopes the Fed and the Bank of England would cut at some stage this year if inflation gets going because of oil and gas. That'll be a lot harder for them to do.
And Russ, we'll be speaking later on in the programme to Pascal Lamy, who's former Director General of the World Trade Organization. Just on the theory around the clock ticking here for the world economy, like how much can the economy withstand before there's lasting damage? Do you have a timeline here? Because everyone's saying, oh, this will be, do we believe Donald Trump? Is it going to be 4 weeks, in which case we have two more weeks left? Like, how long does the economy have, the international economy, before this really starts to bite?
I mean, to accentuate the positive, oil is nowhere near its all-time high of $147 a barrel, and that was in 2008. if you inflation adjust that, then, you know, the oil price is barely half that level now. So that is, so we're not under the duress that we were under then. Mm-hmm. If you inflation adjust the all-time high, then you're looking for oil north of $200 a barrel. So if oil starts hammering above $150 or $200 a barrel, then you will start to feel a degree of duress pretty quickly, I would think.
Okay, so it would be a matter of weeks, not months.
I would think so. That would be my guess, yes. Mm-hmm. Again, depending on, a lot of it will depend on not just the length, the duration of the conflict, but the degree of damage that's done to oil producing infrastructure and oil shipping and pipeline infrastructure. If they're kept relatively whole, things can be repaired quickly. Then again, the oil should return to its stay calm, pretty much. But if there's lots of damage done, then even after the war, there's a big delay. That's really when you would start to see oil prices start to accelerate and people get very frightened.
And of course, the interesting point about this is the American consumer will feel increases in oil quicker, perhaps,
than
most.
They're seeing it in gasoline prices already.
You
can see it at the pumps, absolutely.
And that's because of their taxation structure, isn't it? That they're more beholden to the crude price.
Correct. Yes, absolutely. And again, and this is interesting. If you look at, you know, where can the Iranians apply pressure? As we've heard from Sarah, that this is an existential crisis for the regime in Tehran. So they're going to pull any levers that they can get their hands on, whether it's military or economic. We saw after Liberation Day with President Trump's tariffs last year, stock market went down 10 to 12%. Government borrowing costs went up. He backed off. There was kind of a price point. And I'm sure the Iranians are looking and probing to see what his price point is, perhaps on oil, given its potential knock-on effect upon gasoline prices, consumer confidence, inflation, and therefore all those issues, how they're feeding into the midterm elections that are coming up in November. The Iranians will be looking for those pressure points, and oil might be one of them.
Mm-hmm. And just going back to the decision from the International Energy Agency to release the 400 million barrels of oil, not making much of a difference. I mean, they can do that twice more, can't they? That's what they have in reserve. But why would you do it if it's not going to bring down the price of the oil?
Again, I guess if you think that the calculation, I'm assuming, and I don't know if Faith Birol, the executive director of the IEA, but I'm assuming the calculation is this will be a relatively short conflict, and therefore this will have an effect. Again, as you said, logically, the longer the war goes on, the more dangerous the strategy is to run the reserves down, because eventually you'll get to a point where they're pretty skinny, and if the war's going on, then you have a real problem. So again, this is the leverage the Iranians will be looking at. And that's the calculation of the IEA, and its 32 members will be looking to make it. The best case scenario from a humanitarian one upwards is a short war.
Russ, thank you very much for the benefit of your expertise this morning. Russ Mould there, who is Investment Director with AJ Bell.
The Clare Byrne Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.